Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. I'm here with my good buddy and trader extraordinaire, macro, global macro thinker, and just all around great guy. His name is Tony Greer. Tony, welcome to the Rebel Capitalist. Well, I guess not the show, the Rebel Capitalist channel here live.
Dude, thanks for having me, George. I always appreciate coming on your show. I love the enthusiasm with which you attack the world and these markets. So I'm always happy to talk markets with you, man. How's it going?
Well, doing real well. Can you just share with the viewers and listeners kind of your background with commodities? So we can start there, just real quick, like Reader's Digest version, and then get into what is happening with geopolitics and as it pertains to commodities.
Absolutely. So the short arc of my commodity experience is, I segued from trading on foreign exchange desk for UBS to kind of pivoting around and helping the treasury traders. And that's where I first stepped into the commodity markets in the treasury department of UBS Zurich, where I spent 6 months of my time with UBS. When I got back, I left Goldman Sachs in their commodity trading division, the J. Aron division, and worked there from 94 through 2000. And that's really where I learned everything I know about commodities and the rigor of commodity trading. And, you know, we've seen a couple of extremely volatile situations. I'll say not much like this in my lifetime, but certainly things that rhyme with this. And then from there, I foolishly walked away from the commodity sector into the dot-com bubble to trade basically technology stocks in March of 2000. So I got a really valuable lesson there as I turned around and watched the commodity super cycle unfold right before my eyes. And I was able to find a way to provide value to customers with that commodity knowledge. So I kind of became an equity sales trader, applying all of my commodity knowledge to, you know, how to show guys what might be going on in materials names and industrial names and things like that. So that was really, you know, the heart of it. And then I've been really a natural resources based equity trader since leaving the street and my life as a sales trader and starting TG Macro 5 years ago as a publisher, content creator, consultant, and kind of jack of all trades sometimes. So that's where it all comes from, George.
Yeah. So what events have you seen throughout your, you know, 25-year career or so that have rhymed with what we're seeing right now with these sanctions on Russia, Russia being a top oil producer, the natural gas, I mean, the whole commodity space, fertilizer. I mean, that's a huge deal that I don't think too many people are talking about.
What have I seen that rhymes? I mean, I'm going to tell you, George, very little aside from a number of sort of more isolated circumstances that certainly didn't have this global urgency to it that I feel that this move certainly has. You know, we've got metals trading off into a new dimension now, and that's really concerning. We've got energy markets trading, you know, kind of very extremely bid, looking like they're not done with this move yet. Right. So when I draw back on my experience, you know, I kind of think of, you know, in the sort of the late 90s when gold powered up from 250 through 400 and several mines blew up because they were overhedged, right? And so they were selling forward all of their forward production at 350, 400 and shorted, you know, at prices above that out the calendar. And next thing you know, gold goes 500 bid and the phone starts ringing and you've got a lot of producers that have to take their hedges back because they're sort of blowing up the overhedged book that they've had. So
Is that what happened with nickel today?
A little bit. Yeah, there was definitely some sort of a break. You know, there had to be some break in a ruble payment that sort of, you know, canceled somebody's credit on some kind of a forward payment. And they demanded delivery right away or something like that, or that the position be closed right away. I would imagine that that's what happened in nickel today. You know, that's just indiscriminate position covering buying. You know, where everybody kind of gets out of the way. And it's obviously, you know, I would have to bet that Vladimir Putin has more control or Russia, per se, has more control over what's going on in nickel than anybody else in the world, quite honestly. So, you know, I don't know whether we just don't have all the facts behind what's going on in this whole scenario. And really, nobody knows why nickel went that berserk. Right. It quadrupled in a number of days, you know, so that could be a signal because, George, I get a lot of signals, you know, that we're blowing apart the ESG story and the carbon neutral by 2030 stories with this Russia-Ukraine invasion. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, gold has gone bid through the roof and Putin's got a ton of gold and he's got no treasuries. And now all of a sudden treasuries are sliding. I'm not saying that he's got it played perfectly, but I have a feeling that nobody knows the full extent behind everything that's going on. So yeah. That's the problem that I have right now in trying to read the markets is, you know, reading through the misinformation of war, quite honestly. And all you have to react to is price action. And sometimes that's, you know, not enough, but we're getting to points where the sentiment is getting so strong that you've got to just trade. And, you know, you've got to make sure that your portfolio is lined up with what's about to happen in the world. And I still feel like we are in the first inning of a serious, serious, you know, kind of reweighting of the S&P, if you will, that's going to be in motion as we deal with this commodity crisis. That's fair to say.
This could supercharge it.
Civil unrest, I think, you know, the grain price being out of reach is going to be hairy for headlines and for investors. You know, we've only seen that Arab Spring take place that rhymed with any kind of a food crisis recently, you know, in the Middle East. And I don't have a lot of details on that. We should probably read up on it. I would imagine it's going to have to be met with some kind of massive government assistance. I'm afraid that their response could be more inflation, you know, as inflationary as everything else that they've been doing, you know. And so I'm afraid that they could return to a period of not tightening or something like that and not really and letting this get out of control, because that's what we're heading for. It feels like we're heading for a very stagflationary situation now that, you know, commodities went from a kind of orderly inflationary rise to completely batshit crazy and something that nobody can understand, you know. Yes. So just coming off the historic lows with the lockdown in the rearview mirror, I mean, I'm positioning my book for commodities to be bid for 10 years to come.
And, you know, to your point, Tony, what makes it so difficult is you don't know what's on the balance sheet of these banks or how the balance sheets are set up. You know, how much leverage do they really have? You know, I've talked to Snyder about this quite often, and most people think that Basel III just solves the problem, but they don't understand the way that the banks have of getting around Basel III with derivatives like credit default swaps, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they lever up and we don't know what's off balance sheet, we don't know what's in the black box, nor do we know what could trigger it. You know, to your point, did Russia trigger this nickel thing because some you know, bank had overexposure to it because they are trying to, you know, hedge some sort of commodity or, you know, something like that? Or was it some other form of derivative? And then if that's the case with nickel, you know, what happens? Does wheat also break the derivatives market? Does oil at 150? You know, who knows? Because we just can't see the balance sheets. Therefore, we don't know what the systemic risk is or the contagion risk.
Bingo. Right. So you nailed a couple of points there for me, George, is the trigger that you mentioned. And then there's no way any red blooded trader can look at these screens and not see that the Ukraine invasion being way more aggressive, I think, than the world was kind of sitting here waiting for, if that's fair. There's no red blooded trader that can look at the screens and didn't see the trigger that happened 2 weeks ago when that invasion started. Right. I mean, that's when commodities went full batshit crazy. So we've got the danger, the risk being now, for the first time that I can see, that I've ever seen, every subsector of commodities has gone berserk. And I've never seen that before. It's usually, well, we're doing this 120 oil thing and copper's, you know, $2 and $2.50 a pound, who cares? You know what I mean? The grains are dying at $1.50 a bushel and the farmers are crying. You know what I mean? We've had situations where copper is, you know, taking out every short on the planet and going to absurd levels. The last time we traded up to 10K, and that was totally isolated to the copper markets and didn't even really spill that far over into the other base metals in terms of it being isolated. And the metals markets didn't really care that much. I mean, the energy markets didn't care that much about it either. So all of a sudden now, you look at the charts lineup and you've got the London Metals Index breaking out of a historic long-term double top into all-time highs, a true breakout. You've got, you know, grains recovering off of multi-decade lows and turning around. And you've got oil going, you know, straight back over 100, resuming. So, you know, we've had $170 range from the lockdown lows now, and it's showing no signs of stopping. So how does one hedge their portfolio when absolutely every hard asset is bid only, no supply, steep curve, and we'll do anything we can to get our hands on some now because we know we've got a supply chain shortage to deal with in the future? So I
think this happens to these further short squeezes. You get nickel today, you get nat gas tomorrow, you get corn, you get soybean. I mean, who knows how this plays? It's just, you know, when the politicians come in with this blunt instrument, they can only see what's right in front of their face. And that's to assume that their intentions are good, which I don't think they are. I think they're just trying to, you know, just gauge the wind of popular opinion and do whatever they think will just get them reelected. But in the process, you know, the knock-on effects and unintended consequences are just absolutely staggering when you're dealing with a globalized economy that is so levered.
Yeah. And we were, you know, we were levered and, you know, marching toward the globalist plan and marching right into ESG and, and shifting the global economic center of the universe from oil production in the United States to metal production out of China, right? That's been the clear as day pivot to me that I think that this administration is fully behind, obviously, with every move that they make. And then they come out and deny it like President just did today, right? He said, my administration has got nothing to do with diminishing oil production in the United States. Like, that's a good one. You know what I mean? I hate to do like a goofy laugh, but it's like, what the hell are we dealing with? You know, so that to me feels like, you know, it's got shades of a nefarious operation, doesn't it? And so you have to just play the cards the way you can play them. And the only way that I see being able to play them is to make sure that I've got exposure, you know, to metals and mining, to energy and to grains, and to make sure that I'm totally gone and out of the way of anything technology or consumer discretionary, because it's going to be a long haul for them if rates are going to be rising to battle this commodity issue.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's, on that note, I'd love to get your opinion on kind of the CNBC homepage. I'm doing a screen share, so hopefully you can see this. Can you see this, Tony?
Let me see. I'm looking. Yes, I do.
Okay. So, and then guys, for those of you on the live stream, if you've got a specific question for Tony, make sure you click that link and get in queue. If we have a little time here at the end, we'll take some questions from the audience. So, I mean, right here, CNBC homepage, U.S. expected to announce ban on Russian oil as of today. Then we've got Russia warns of $300 oil, threatens to cut off European gas if West bans energy imports.
I like the Kathy Wood plug there too. It's totally right to believe in Tesla, George. It's totally okay.
Yeah, right. But then you've got Elon Musk himself coming out and saying that the United States needs to find more oil. They need to find more energy. They need to find carbon. I mean,
if that doesn't send the message that, you know, the nation's appointed king of the electronic vehicle industry is perfectly okay announcing publicly that we've got a problem and need to adjust back to gas. You know what I mean? Like we're talking about singularity.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like financial singularity to me, but.
Well, you can see why he's saying this. I mean, you got kind of a hat tip for being honest here. I mean, the next headline is EU pledges to cut Russian gas imports by 2/3 before the end of the year. Oh, really? I mean, how's that going to work out going into next winter? Basically what they're saying is we're going to allow the poor of our countries to freeze to death, potentially.
Or starve. Or combo.
Just basically to virtue signal against Russia, because we don't want to deal with some sort of bad PR or cancel culture. Because at the end of the day, this is, you know, you could say that, well, it's going to affect Russia this way and that way. maybe not. I mean, what they're doing here has the potential to be far more detrimental to their domestic economy than it does to Russia. You know, one tweet that I sent out last night, Tony, along these lines is, and I think it may be good food for thought here for the audience, is I said the ruble has collapsed 50% against the dollar. The dollar has collapsed 20% against gas. Which has a greater impact on their domestic economy?
Such a great point.
And I think that, you know, just look at what's happening with the ruble and they listen to the media. They say, oh my gosh, the Russian economy is collapsing. You know, we're winning. This Putin guy's a moron. He's an idiot. So we should go ahead and pursue a war with Russia because we could just clean this guy's clock in 5 minutes, just like we did with Saddam Hussein or something like
Syria and whatever, right?
Yeah. And you're like, whoa, time out here. You know, you don't realize the potential knock-on effects again that this may cause. And this is something where we need to be very level-headed and understand that we are incredibly vulnerable, whether we like it or not. And then going back to that CNBC homepage, you know, what does that, I mean, you've been reading these headlines for so long and understanding the global macro situation here, what signals do those headlines give you, I guess?
Oh, man, you know, I guess just that this is going to get way more complicated before any of the pressure eases up, George. I feel like, you know, we're twisting a Rubik's Cube of international order right now.
Great way to say it.
Yeah, and I just don't know how it's going to shake out. Man, you know, I'm trying to look at what the market's telling me, and I'm looking at KRB. You know, certain things are screaming at me, and, you know, we're looking at KRBN, right? European carbon credits, and how it looks like that Russia-Ukraine invasion drove a stake through the heart of that trade idea, right? And it's going to be really hard to get that European genie back in the ESG bottle path toward, you know, them continuing to push this politically when they're going to have evidence that it's not working all over the screens, the news and reality. Right. So the KRBN trade just said, we're out, man. This thing is dead for now. 35-40% off the highs. OK, a big bounce today, but a 35-40% haircut, that's got to be devastating to holders of that. And it has to make it a long time before we start retracing through the highs of this. So that to me is a big sort of turning point signal that I'm trying to absorb a little bit.
Tony, how do you see, for me, all of the fundamentals make sense for energy and commodities going higher. But then the contrarian inside of me says, wait a minute here. Everyone is seeing this. Everybody's talking about it. CNBC is even talking about how commodities are going higher, oil going, you're seeing all these headlines, $300 a barrel oil. And it seems like everybody is on one side of the boat that commodities are just going higher, 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 higher. And so how do you balance that? Because, you know, you want to be a contrarian. That's usually the smart thing to do. But the fundamentals are just screaming that this is going higher.
That's right. I can add one thing to that, George. And I think, you know, if it's kind of, let me just think for a second. I knew how I wanted to answer that, and then I lost my train of thought. So repeat the question again for 1 second, and it'll come back.
No problem. Yeah, because this is the a position that I always find myself in, especially with commodities.
I know it. I got the answer. I've got the answer. I'm sorry. So the reason what I look for, I apologize for that brain fart. The reason I look for what's different this time, right? It's getting crowded. I've been in the commodity boat a long time. I've been in the energy boat since I was the only guy in the energy boat, and now the boat is overflowing, right? So I've got that working against me, and I'm factoring that into my trading, which is why I've sold a lot of my oil here and kept my oil stocks. But my point is, the reason it's different this time in commodities, potentially, is that there's never been a war on production like there is now.
Right, right.
Historically, it was simple as a commodity trader when I showed up at J. Aron in the 90s, and we were not in a centrally planned market. We were in the wild fucking West, and it was every man for himself, And everybody knew that every single trade, every commodity move was an isolated card game, right? And somebody was going to win that pot and somebody was going to get crushed fading it. And there was going to be a news event that made a Hiroshima bubble and everything was going to come back down to earth, right? The trade always in your head was, well, this is rallying, but the cure for higher prices and higher prices, because if you produce these commodities now, you turn the spigot on, man, and you let them have it when the price is going berserk. We locked all the spigots up.
Yeah, right. Right.
Right. And we're walking into the base metals, you know, to look to just cover our short here, and the shelves are bare, right? You look at commodity exchange inventories in copper across all three delivery points. We're at the historic low end of the range, about to go to a new low in copper inventories. So that's, and you know, how are we globally positioned toward copper production, right? It's still a bit of a green game right now, isn't it? While they're not taking them to zero and a lot of the production is outside the States, that's conversation in the industry, right? Is, oh, well, we got to make sure that your energy production is, you know, your emissions aren't too high versus your mining output. And that's still a conversation that's squelching supply. You know, in the energy market, we don't even have to go into all the ways that the Biden administration has cut off supply, you know, and so that's what's different to me this time. And the thing about it, it's a little bit like sentiment can be like stochastics, where it can run for a really, really long time. You know, it can run way longer than anybody fading it can remain solvent. Right. Yeah. And I'm trying to think about this price action. I'd say we're in the first or second inning of this type of exploding commodity price action. We went through the year of 2020 where Bitcoin went up every fucking day, every week, every month, and was up 300% on the year. I would not be shocked if the Bloomberg Commodity Index did that this year and next year.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Where's the money going to go, George? The money's going to have to come gushing out of technology, looking for a home. And I think it started to find its way into gold. And I think it's going to trickle into the hard assets from there. I think the smart money that comes out of tech goes right into natural resources immediately, full stop, because they're not positioned there at all yet. And then there'll be some kind of a pullback or whatever. But I see this great rotation that I've been following steamrolling from here forward, where tech gets crushed and natural resources just moonshot.
I don't know how you can avoid a deep, deep recession, if not depression, if that comes to fruition. I mean, if we think about it here, if the Fed does in fact raise rates, if you've got oil prices going to 150, possibly 200, which means gas prices in the United States going to, I mean, what, six?
$6, $7. Totally prohibitive pricing. Yeah, totally prohibitive.
A gallon. And so you've got so what does that do to aggregate demand for other consumer goods? What does that do to an economy that's 70% consumption, where the majority, I'm not going to say the majority of people's disposable income, but in the poor and middle class, for sure, the majority of their disposable income every single month is being sucked up at the gas pumps. And not to mention higher food prices as well. So in an environment with the Fed raising rates and then potentially this rotation from growth to value, if you want to call it that, or tech into commodities and hard assets, when I would imagine most of the pension funds, most of the 401ks are heavy tech, and the majority of the purchasing power in the United States are the 401ks and home equity. If you've got 401ks going down, if you got interest rates going up, the price of gas going to $7 a gallon, and food prices going up,
nobody can buy anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah, it's terrible. And
maybe that's what the yield curve is telling us.
Yeah, it could be. You know, what I feared, George, right on top of that is, you know, we haven't even begun. The Fed hasn't even begun to address this issue. It's almost to me like they're purposely dragging their feet, because they did all this taper talk and try to throw that at the markets. And last month, the month of February, I think the balance sheet was off like 1 or 2 basis points. Oh, excuse me. The month of February, I don't even think it was even off. The last 2 weeks, it was off a couple of basis points. We haven't had a monthly paring down, actually, of the balance sheet since we doubled the balance sheet. So there has been, I'm a believer that that is the number one contributing force to all of the commodity inflation that we're seeing. And we haven't even addressed the factor that caused the issue yet, right? By raising rates and paring the balance sheet down. I mean, the last time we had 7% to 10% headline inflation, short-term rates were 12%.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we haven't done anything towards trying to slow down this fire that they've started. And that's what's really, really scary, as you know, the price of nickel projects. And like you said, who knows which one is next tomorrow, but there's going to be one.
Is there anything that's interesting in Russia right now? Or is it just completely uninvestable?
You know, I love Cuppy, Harrison Kupperman. And so, right, who doesn't love a guy that puts himself out there and intelligibly and accountably and gets it right so often, right? So
yeah,
this is not to cut on Cuppy, but you know, his instinct was to buy it the day of the breakdown, right? And we had no idea of the magnitude of what Russia was going to do or what the global response was going to be yet. So I'm going to say I had a conversation with him. I kind of found fault with that trade right off the bat. I was like, dude, you never buy the first day of a macro blow up, right? If you're going to buy it, you got to let the smoke settle a little and, you know, see what the players at the table are doing. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that that's where his trade failed. And I'm not picking on him because he gets so many of them right. But I'm just trying to point out like how that could have been handled differently if you're trying to look at investing in Russia. Right. Like we had the massive blow up. The ruble is coming apart, devaluing. The Russian stock market's going to zero. They're getting cut out of the SWIFT system. CDS is exploding. You as an investor, you don't close your eyes and stick a bid into any of that. Right. So is there going to be a time? Yeah, man. You know, the Jared Dillian tank trade is undefeated.
You know, what is that?
The Jared Dillian tank trade, George, you should have him on your show just to discuss the tank trade. And that is whenever they're rolling tanks into a country and, you know, a country is getting devalued because of it, i.e. Russia, that turns out to be a multi-bagger investment if you wait for the right moment, you know, to start moving money towards it and not be a hero and decide that today is the day that I'm going to buy this. So if it's something that you can watch and wade into, and you have to have a really bionic long-term trading horizon to do this, which is not exactly my style, but it's Jared's. And he's the kind of guy that'll pick up some of these assets here at 20 and 30 cents on the dollar, know that his downside is limited, and just wait. Because a country, to me, that rich in natural resources is not going to be put out of business for very long, right? I mean, if we're going to pivot into, hey, we're going to pivot into electronic vehicles, we ain't doing it without Russia production. End of story. Yep.
Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with macro economics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out of control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow Rebel Capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level.
You know, what was funny is I was trying to think through what Jim Rogers is doing right now when I was talking to Jesse Felder the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really neat conversation because, as you know, this is Jim's forte.
Yeah,
he's been doing this since literally the 1960s. So no one has as much experience as Jim Rogers does in these types of environments. So I was fortunate. I had my assistant reach out to him, and I'm going to talk to him tomorrow night. So I'm going to be asking him, you know, these questions and find out exactly what he's doing. My guess is that is that's his play. He's got it on it on his watch list. He is very, very interested. But my guess is he's going to tell me he's waiting for a catalyst that will tell him that that things are shifting in the other direction. But we'll have to see.
Sounds good, man. I agree with you that they're shifting. That's for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. So it looks like we've got maybe a couple questions here. Tony, you want to take those? All right, sir. What's your name?
Gonzalo. Hey, Tony. Hey, guys.
What's happening, man?
Good, good, good. So I'm a business owner, and I'm you know, I have a lot of cash savings, and I see kind of being dwindled with inflation, or you know, the price hikes of products. I don't know if we have inflation or not long term. But one of the things, Tony, I want to ask you is what I've been doing, and tell me if my thinking is off. I've been buying 6 months to 9 month calls on GLD the last couple of months. Last time I heard you say go commodities, go gold, which has been a great trade. But I've been buying long, like 6 to 9 month calls, and make that in equal proportion to the cash I have. So if the market takes like a 40%, 50% dive, then I don't lose all that cash, but I'm able to take the upside with a call. And I'm buying like maybe 80 delta. Is that the right thinking, or is my thinking off?
Look, you know, as soon as you delve into option strategies, you can get, you know, you are automatically, you know, into a higher risk profile. Mm-hmm. So that is to be just at least acknowledged.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah,
I do understand that type of I do understand that type of trading. But I think that this type of a move requires more sort of cash investing. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think it's more than just, you know, I think, put it this way, I would want you to think more in terms of do I have the right calls for the right, you know, strategy, but rather am I in the right names and sectors, and do I have no exposure elsewhere? And I don't mean to turn that question upside down on you if you meant to go into a little bit of an options discussion, but I've learned my lesson a long time ago with options, and you know, in the sense that, you know, 90% of them expire worthless. I veered away from them and started trading a cash account and decided that I wanted to just generate massive returns every year using as little leverage as possible. So you're approaching it from a different angle from me. I certainly think you've got the direction right. And this seems to be the kind of case where it's a longer term trade, where longer dated options might be a smart strategy, just intuitively, where you don't have a lot of capital at risk. You've got the upside. You've got a limited cap on your losses because you know what the price you bought the option for. I don't think that's outrageous in this day and age. So while it's not something that I would do, I feel like you've got a lot of the trade right. And I would just try to open up your mind a little bit to being like, you know, okay, I've got the gold, that's good, but what if oil goes to 200 and gold stops? What if industrial metals keep going and gold stops?
Right.
What if there's another air raid on gold that knocks it down $150 after the FOMC meeting next week?
Yeah. That makes total sense. And the things I've been into based on like the commodity cycle, like I've been doing like a DBC options, you know, the broad commodities. I've been doing DBO, which is the oil commodities, and everything has been up. My only concern was because, you know, you listen to some people talk and some people are like, this is going to be deflationary. The Fed's going to come in and crash everything. And I'm like, well, if you go down 40%, right, that's 40% on a portfolio. Let's have an example, an even number, let's say $100,000, that's 40 grand. With options, if you're into it and you're into it for like 5 grand, 10 grand, it's almost the same upside, but if they tank everything, then it really doesn't affect you as much. That's the only thought I have with options.
I understand it. I totally like it because I also like you know, the investment and counting the money gone. I'm not going to say that there's not bets that I've thought that lined up where that was the right way to play it, especially when you have a multiple of upside. So I just like to say that that's not my general strategy, just so that you know that I'm not a delta trading expert anymore.
Got it. No, but it makes total sense. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, not at all. Be in the right sector.
Gonzalo, just hang on for a second because I want to elaborate on that just for a moment here. But Tony, do you think there's an argument to look at, let's go back to Cuppy. I think he's buying or he bought the ETF, I believe it's RSX.
Yeah.
Is there an argument for, since that's kind of, well, maybe bottomed, that buying that is like a call option? if you just treat it like a call option where you might get a, you know, a 10 or 15% dividend yield for holding the call option. It could be a zero or it could be a 10 bagger.
I wouldn't doubt that that's not a bad play to, way to play RSX, right? I mean, you know, the world's writing it off for dead. They're in the mid, they're in the middle of like liquidating the freaking thing essentially. And, you know, there's still going to be assets there. They're going to come out of this once it's all over. I just don't know the path to that. And the thing that worries me with options is that you're never guaranteed to get the vol right. Right. Mm-hmm. You may be loaded with calls, upside calls, and the market goes straight to your price. And for whatever reason, volatility implodes on that move higher.
Oh, but see, I was talking about buying the ETF, not the options on the ETF.
Buying the ETF is the way to go. You know what I mean?
It as an option.
Yeah. There's, treat it as an option and say, look, I've got a defined loss here. If they liquidate this thing. Yeah. I mean, it might be, it's definitely in the category of a risky trade, but I don't see why it fits the tank trade, right? If you can hold on long enough, be prepared to get halved and live through it and go from there.
Yeah, I'm currently in RXX. I did options on that. I did things, and Charles Schwab and Tastyworks would not allow me to get in or out any positions. They froze everything.
Okay, so that's a good. That's my next question, because Gonzalo, were you saying that you're buying options on the GLD?
Well, yeah. So what I did is when everyone's saying about gold, because right, like when I got into GLD, I think it was trading like at 170 and the volatility was so low. They were trading it like there was like no volatility. I was getting in for about $500 for 6 months.
Okay. Right? So it was cheap. But my point there is, Tony, what was Cuppy saying about RSX the other day? And that if he was saying something, if you get zeroed out, and I don't know what exactly that means, of the RSX, you could get zeroed out of the GLD because it's the same company. What was he saying?
I didn't read that passage, but he said that, you know, I mean, I'm sure he means if the ETF has to basically liquidate, which wouldn't be the first time that we've seen that. And I don't think he means that with GLD, but I think he means
that. Something about GLD that if you're worried about this with RSX, you should also be worried about that with, let me pull it up, guys. Just give me one second here, if you don't mind, because I'd really like your thoughts on that. Cause you kind of, obviously you speak Cuppy's language.
Yeah. Let me see exactly what he meant. I mean, I may have missed it. It sounds familiar, but.
Well, if I can't find it here, we'll move on.
Now, dude, as you're looking, George, I noticed that I was seeing some stuff about the renewable trade, and they're saying like if we're cutting off oil, one of the big concerns is with Russia and Ukraine, they account for 40% of the minerals needed for renewables.
Yeah.
Right. So we're dependent on them regardless, oil or minerals.
Yeah. Yeah. We're dependent on them either way. I mean, you know, moving into
carbon here we go. Storage. Here we go. Tony, can you see this? He says, seriously, if they sell us out on RSX, then GDX and GDXJ are also terminal zeros.
Oh, okay. So he's basically saying if you're long RSX and they zero you out and liquidate the ETF so it no longer trades, you get nothing back. That will be a theft, I think, on the order of if you sort of stand for delivery of own GLD potentially and try to stand for delivery of your gold. You know, I think it may be the same thing as you're not going to get any gold.
And I think he's saying it might be the same because it's the same company.
Exactly. So it's the same provider. So he's saying in a liquidation event, if they're not going to honor the value and give it back to you, then gold faces a similar. It sounds like a tweet made out of like anger for losing money in RSX, quite honestly.
And right here, he's saying very worried. If they do that, the rest of their business, I think he's talking about the ETF provider, is worthless. Who the fuck wants a gold ETF where they can zero you?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that it sounds like he's reacting to the trade going a little bit pear-shaped, only because, you know, he's complaining that the ETF creator can, if it's the same ETF creator that would zero you out in RSX when that's not a fair trade, if the assets aren't worthless or the assets aren't all belly up, Chapter 11 or whatever. I think maybe he's saying that, you know, in the case of a GLD liquidation or something like that, if you're not going to get gold out of that trade, then it's the same premise.
Yeah, right.
Really, you really don't own the asset. So it's a Fugazi ETF maker along those lines. I don't know if he's got a real complaint there, but.
Yeah, well, I appreciate
you. I do see risk in RSX getting zeroed out. I mean, they're just an ETF creator. What are they going to take, a reputational loss and some kind of a hickey on their balance sheet for trading it? And they'll move on and create another ETF that raises the funds right back.
Yeah, if a reputational loss, I would argue in today's environment, maybe a reputation gain.
Enhancer. Exactly. Yeah.
Let me ask one final question. If someone wanted to get into gold to create a hedge, what are your thoughts, guys, on doing spot physical gold so you can act in that, so that you don't pay the premium of having physical gold delivery if someone can't get into it because there's limited supply as a hedge for inflation?
That's what I've been buying.
Okay.
Fizz, right? PHYS. Yeah, yeah. That makes total sense to me. I mean, that sprots and you'll get physical. You know, in the case of a liquidation event, if you stand there for it, I believe. So I think that totally makes sense. That, I mean, that's what I own now and had transferred out of GLD once I learned that they weren't going to give you gold and that you really never own gold. So that didn't make sense. So I just transferred the position into Fizz and were traded that way.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate your help and support in these crazy times.
Anytime. Yeah. Good luck in the markets, brother.
All right. Well, I think that's it, Tony, for the people on the live stream. We've got 800 people, believe it or not, watching us go back and forth here. Tell them where they can find out more about what you do. I know we were tweeting yesterday about TG Macro. Tell us about what that is.
You're a gentleman, George. You retweeted my thread that I put out, which was really just the first time that I solicited Twitter for any clients at all. I waited a really long time to do that. I started my newsletter in on election day in 2016 and started building my client and my subscriber base out one subscriber at a time. And I try to build some good investing tools into my platform at www.tgmacro.com. I'm the editor of the Morning Navigator newsletter that I write 4 days a week. And I try to really distill the complexity of everyday trading down into the most palatable, bite-size, enjoyable reading form that I can, and just really try my best every day to offer the best guidance to people based on what I'm doing with my money. And so you can email me at tony@tgmacro or find me on Twitter @tgmacro. And I'll always respond to you once I have find the message and have some time.
Yeah, guys, not only should you check this out if you want a trading edge, if you're that type of person, that's how you invest, is kind of more short-term time horizon. But we also have to support our fellow rebel capitalists. And Mr. Tony Greer is definitely a proud rebel capitalist himself. So go check out his website and show him some love.
I love how you roll, George. That's why, my man. I love how you roll. So let's keep the ball rolling. I'm happy to help any of your clients that I can, man. That's why we're here.
All right, buddy. I appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Anytime. You too, George. Speak soon.